Shalom and welcome to this week's Living Torah, and Happy New Year, Gregorian 2019. Yeah, wow. It was 2018, kind of a crazy year, at least for us. It ended up that way. So 2019, looking forward to amazing time and what the Father has in store for us. Got a special guest in the room today, so I want to introduce him. He just comes in once in a while. Come on. Come on, Kai. This is our puppy, Kaya, so say hi. Yeah, I know. Kelly went down to get, we watch her brother once in a while, so she came up to say hi to today because she likes people. She gets lonely. So, all right, go down. Get down. See ya. Bye. Get down, crazy dog. Okay, so how many places do you get that, right? We've done a lot of things through the years that there she goes. She's hopefully not going to knock anything over. People still remember when I was doing the videos in Oklahoma, and we had a kind of a hobby farm back in that day, and I'd go outside and I'd have goats behind me, and you never knew what was going to be in the video back in those days. So, a couple things. The Israel tour, Connect Israel tour, September, I believe September 1st to the 13th. We are actually backing it off to where we only have 25 people. That's going to be our maximum now. We've had it at 30, 35. We've decided that we wanted to have a few less cats in the litter. So the information is on connecttoisrael.com. We already have, we're already at 60%. I think it's about 60% registration. So if you'd like information on that, connecttoisrael.com, and you can join us in September. Kathy said last week that I kind of got over a little bit on the football thing. You know, people that, corner me wherever I go, and I've got to be, I've got to be for their team of their state. And so I actually did that a little bit on purpose last week, because what I wanted to portray is just how easily people are offended these days. You know, Scripture talks about it. Yeshua actually says, "Blessed is he who is not offended by me." The gospel message, the message of the kingdom, the message of the Redeemer, this whole package here that we have, and then you move into a place of Torah, it offends people. And in the offense, they lose out on incredible blessings. I have talked to people that are just distraught in life, and have talked to them about my experience and how the Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, how miraculously my life was changed. And because of that testimony, I have had people that would no longer talk to me. I mean, they just shunned you like you were the plague. Then you take it to a level of Torah, and here you're offering someone a lifestyle that is not man's tradition, but a lifestyle that is literally that which the Father himself laid out for us to walk by. And that lifestyle, I believe, can produce freedom. Have people done things even with the Torah that have caused bondage? Yes, because that's kind of man's propensity to take what the Father gives and to mess it up. It is not the fault of the Torah. It is not the fault of the Father himself. It is that this is what man does. But I've had people that I've talked to and, you know, about Torah. No, that's done away with. And in this, you start to try to, you know, get a conversation going with them. No, they already have their mind made up of everything in life. There are many times that person is in bondage themselves. They're angry at the world. Their whole disposition toward life is negative. But yet when you give them something that can be of freedom, they get offended. Go back. Here's an assignment. Didn't really think about going this far with this. But here's an assignment. Go back to your last emails that you've sent out to people. Go back and look at Facebook posts. Are those positive? Are those negative? We're going to get into this a little bit more in just a few moments when we get into the words of Shaul here. You can hand somebody something of freedom, but yet they take offense. And because of that offense, they remain in bondage. And then what's so, interesting, is not funny by any stretch of the imagination, but you hand somebody something, you offer someone something of freedom, like the Torah, and then they reject it, and then they end up blaming you for their bondage. That's happened to me. That's happened to me before. I wish I could say it's just happened once in a while, but it happens more often than I'm really I'm thinking about it now. It's crazy. It really is. So let's go to Philippians with all of that, and let's back up to verse 9. And verse 9 says this, "And this is my prayer, that your love may more and more overflow in fullness and knowledge and depth of discernment." So we talked about last week, as in the last few minutes, that it is the beginning of everything is love. Love, knowledge, discernment. Now, it seems that that would be kind of backwards. It seems that we should have knowledge first, because this is the Greek way of looking at things, that we need to go after knowledge, and then from that knowledge we then get discernment, and then somewhere along the way love is going to flow out of all that. But everything begins in the Father's eyes. Everything begins out of love. Love for Him, love for others, and love for self. Okay? And I really would taught on this many times, that if we do not have a proper love for ourselves, we'll never be able to find that love for others and that love for Him. So, love produces a correct pursuit of knowledge, and that knowledge should then give us discernment about our walk. So, going on, it says, "So that you will be able to determine what is best, and thus be pure and without blame for the day of the Messiah." So that, okay, what we're going, this formula that he's laying out is a so that. It's like a therefore. Look at why the word therefore is what it is therefore. Okay, this is one of those so that's. So verse 9 ties into verse 10, because what we've done in verse 9 is now setting us up for what is going to happen in verse 10. And what is going to happen is this, that one day each of us will stand before Him. Here's the word is again. So that Filled with the righteousness. Yeah. Now I missed where it's at. Filled with the fruit of righteousness. Back up one verse. So that you will be able to determine what is best and thus be pure and without blame for the day of the Messiah. His desire is for us to stand before Him blameless. This does not mean that we're going to stand before Him having perfected life. None of us will ever reach the place of perfection. I mean, I'm living proof of that one, okay? None of us will ever reach the place of perfection. The only one that has that right and has reached that is Messiah Himself. But we can stand before Him blameless. See, blameless is when we did the right thing. Is that when He called us to a task. Think about your children. Think about children, grandchildren. As they, you hand them a coloring book. You hand them some crayons. What are they going to do? They're going to start coloring on the page. As they begin that process, they're going to do so not in perfection. Especially if I, you know, if you have my mother saved everything that that I ever did in life, and you look back at it, and it's like, you know, this is crazy. This is terrible. I've got a little piece of pottery over here behind me that I actually did. My mother kept that, and I mean, it's terrible. I wouldn't even show it on camera. The workmanship is that bad. But I remember doing that. And I remember that I did it with everything that I had. And my mother kept it. I did not take it home and she said, "This is terrible." She saw that I had put myself into it. And when we stand before Him, it will not be that we are blameless, or excuse me, that we are perfect before Him, but that we are blameless before Him. We did what we were called to do with everything that we had. So, understanding, again, that we will all stand before Him. That thought, that very thought should drive our lives. That everything that we are doing on a daily basis, every opportunity that is given to us, I was talking with someone yesterday about this, that, you know, we have, when we get up in the morning, every one of us has the same amount of time in our day. It is what we do with that time that makes a difference in our life. So we begin with time. We can control to a certain point that time, but there's one thing that we cannot control on a daily basis, and that is divine appointments. Every one of us will be given divine appointments along the way of our day. Are we seizing those divine appointments? We will stand before Him and give an account for the divine appointments that He brought into our lives. It goes on and says, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Messiah, the Yeshua the Messiah, to the glory and praise of Elohim. Filled with the fruit of righteousness. It began with love, which produced knowledge, which produced discernment, and that then produces fruit. Fruit produces seeds. Seeds produce fruit. Now, this is chicken or the egg first, but it doesn't really matter which one came first. That is one of the craziest arguments, which came first, the chicken or the egg. It doesn't really matter. Now, we know, because we read Genesis chapter 1, we know that the tree, the plant that would produce fruit came first. But in that fruit, in that tree, which produced that fruit, would be seeds. Seeds would then be used to produce more fruit, which is to produce more seed. What is the purpose of a seed? Most would say the purpose of a seed is to produce the fruit. No. The purpose of a seed is to produce seed. The purpose of seed is to produce more seed. Because if at any time you do not produce seed, life ends. That is true in humankind. That is also true in plants, in nature, in creation. It is just a fact. This is why hybrids, this is why GMO, this is why cloning, all of these things are an abomination unto the Father, because when you buy a tomato that has been genetically modified and it cannot produce seed, then it cannot reproduce itself. See, the purpose of seed is to produce seed, but in the meantime, in the process of going from seed to seed, someone gets to enjoy fruit. Scripture says of Yeshua, for the joy that was set before him, he endured. He came, the seed, okay, we go back, the seed that was placed into the woman, Miriam, was to produce more seed. The seed of the covenant. We are called the fruit. We are called his fruit, which are to produce more seed, to produce more fruit. This is, I was thinking about this as I was kind of putting this together, that we were, many of us were taught this thing of going out and handing a tract to somebody. Okay, hand them a tract and then have them say a prayer so that you can go back to, you know, wherever you go to, and you can mark off that, you know, I got this person, this person, this person. I believe that in most cases, that process, I'm going to give an exception here, but that very process is an abomination. Why? Because when that's all you do is hand someone a tract, and then you have them say a prayer, and so you can mark off their name, you have not given them the tools to produce fruit, to produce more seed. This is why handing someone a book, just you know, just doing a movie so we can just kind of broadcast it out there for everybody, that's not going to produce fruit, which will then produce more seed. In order for us to, we need to look at this. I'm thinking, you can see I'm thinking as I'm talking right now, that we must, this is why it goes back to love, relationships, okay? What produces fruit that produces more seed? Relationships. We must become involved in someone's life. Yeshua came, you know, that the word of John chapter 3, or John 3:16, that he was sent. Why? Because the Creator desired to be a part of our lives. Shaul here is showing us that he desired to be a part of people's lives. Are we being fruitful? Are we being fruitful so that we can produce more seed for his kingdom? Some thoughts to kind of run through a little bit. Now, brothers, I want you to know what has happened to me has helped in advancing the good news. Really, Shaul? you're in prison, and you're happy about it. You're saying, Kaya, down. No. You're saying that what has happened to you of you being put in prison is for good. You mean, like he would say later on, all things work together for good? Yeah, he sees that there is a purpose. Going back to the introduction. The purpose that he sees a purpose because he saw a purpose in the first place. He can now look back at his original purpose of being in the jail in Philippi and see that that brought forth a purpose in his life today. So he can count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Why? Because it's about the perfecting of you and of others. So he knows that this is going to be affecting others. If we look at it today in this wonderful 2020 hindsight that we have, if it were not for Shaul being put into prison, as much as he loved these people, as dear as they were to him, he would have probably left to his own, you know, his own desires. He would have probably said, you know, okay, I'm kind of coming to the end of ministry here, and I need to be raising up some people. Maybe me and Timothy can just move to Philippi, and I can talk with them, I can teach them, I can raise Timothy up here in these days. Yeah, everything's going to be fine. If that would have happened, we would not have the book of Philippians. We would not have many other books also, because it was in the jail cell. This caused him to have to write these letters. Him being thrown in jail, we are able to taste of the fruit of him being in that jail. It has become clear to the whole palace and to everyone else that it is because of the Messiah that I am in chains. So much for this thought, you know. Well, if I just receive Messiah, everything's going to be fine in life. If I just follow the Torah, is that the reason that you came into this? Did you just one day, you know, come receive Messiah so that everything could be fine in your own life? So that, you know, if I just say this prayer, all of a sudden I'll be able to walk in this utopian life. And then you find out that didn't work. It doesn't work that way. So then, you know, somebody told you about Torah, and you, oh, okay. If I just do these things, then I'm going to find this utopian life. I hate to break this bad news to you, but life is not about utopia. Life is about struggles. Life is about walking through difficult situations. Life is about us changing into the image of Messiah, the kingdom. Okay, on that side, after that day, that's about that, you know, whatever that utopian thing actually, I mean, when it comes down to in many people's minds is something that's, you know, they're kind of thinking about they watch too much Wizard of Oz as a child or something. I think the kingdom is going to be so far different than what many people are thinking of. And that's going to be fine. But on this side, if you're looking for the you know, whatever cliche you want to come up with, the bed of roses, or, you know, add your own thing in there.
Jerusalem. How I long for you.
That's not what this life is about. Sometimes life is difficult, but life is difficult. Let me go and read a couple of verses here. Also, my being in prison has given most of the brothers in Messiah confidence, so that they have become much more bold in speaking the word of Elohim fearlessly. Our walk is our testimony. Think about that. Our walk is our testimony. Our walk is a reflection of the one that we say we are following. The old cliche, you're the only Yeshua some will ever see. There's actually a song written about that, I believe. When someone sees our lives, this is important. When someone sees us, when they watch our lives, and let me tell you, newsflash, people watch you. I understand this. Do I always come out on the other end with the rewards and the fly, or with the awards and the flying colors and all that kind of, no. I'm as imperfect as anybody out there. Sometimes a little more, I think. But when someone sees us, and you put on the badge of, I'm a follower of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, when you then take that to that the next level of following Torah, when you embrace Shabbat, when you sit at a restaurant and you're asking about, does the tamales have pork or beef, and does the refried beans, are they fixed with lard, and you asking all these questions, and finally the waiter, the waitress says, what in the world are why are you asking these questions? Well, we eat biblically kosher. At that moment in time, you have now put a big target on yourself. You're going to walk out of there, and the person may forget you, but they will never forget that there was someone that was talking to them about something, about this God, and about some lifestyle. And what you do for the rest of the conversation, what you do for the rest of your lunch, the rest of your dinner, you are going to be a reflection of the God that you're saying you serve. So if you're going through all of this, asking about the refried beans and the tamales and the bacon on the, bacon bits on the salad and all of these things, and then you become that customer that all waiters and waitresses, you're the nightmare. You're the absolute nightmare. And then you leave a measly tip. You have now become a bad reflection of the one that you say you serve. We need to get a hold of this, folks. That our walk is affecting the testimony. If at every struggle that comes along, every time something, kind of rocks your little apple cart, you fall apart. All of a sudden, everything in the world you can't stand it. You're like the snowflakes, the generation called the snowflakes today. You just melted everything. But yet you're proclaiming greater is he who is in me than he who is in the world. And, you know, if the same spirit that raised Messiah from, if you're proclaiming all of those things, but yet at everything you're falling apart, it's called hypocrisy. It's called hypocrisy. Plain and simple. Let me jump ahead. Let me jump ahead here. Verse 19. For I know that this will work out for my deliverance. And we'll come back to 15 in a second. That's actually a reference to a verse in the book of Job, of all places. Job chapter 13, we're going to start up in verse 13. So, and he's, you know, he's talking to his so-called friends. So be quiet. Let me be. I'll do the talking. Come on. I'll do the talking. Come on me what may. That's a hard one to say. Why am I taking my flesh in my teeth, taking my life in my hands? Look, he will kill me. I don't expect more. But I will still defend my ways to his face. And this is what will save me. This is the verse. This is what will save me. That a hypocrite cannot appear before him. This is what will save me. That a hypocrite will not appear before him, but I will not be a hypocrite. Now, if you go to Caesarea, Caesarea, right there on the beach of the Mediterranean in Israel, this is where Herod built one of his palaces and everything. And this is one of the places that Shaul is actually being held. It is in the same place that he would stand. We can go back to the book of Acts, where he stands before Agrippa, I think it was, and he is in a Colosseum, like an amphitheater, and this is where they would have had actors. They would have plays. Below that, one level below that, many of you have been down there, was the changing rooms. They would have had, you know, masks. They would have had costumes. They were actors. The word actor is actually related to the word that we get hypocrite from. What is an actor? An actor is someone that portrays someone else that they are not. Sorry, Hollywood. An actor, an actress, is someone who portrays someone who they are not. Shaul is going to begin to talk about this. And he understands that he's going to stand before Messiah on that day. But he will stand there blameless because he has not been an actor. He has been himself. So back up to verse 15. True, some are proclaiming the Messiah out of jealousy and rivalry, but others are doing it in goodwill. The latter act from love, aware that I am put where I am for defending the good news, the gospel, while the former announce the Messiah out of selfish ambition, with impure motives, supposing they can stir up trouble for me in prison. I remember, this was almost 30 years ago now, I remember when I came to the revelation that not all who were preachers, evangelists, pastors, not everyone was in it for the right motives. That was a rough day for me, because I came into my faith in Messiah was Kathy will tell you, was literally transforming. She said, and I kind of, she relates it to Shaul. She says, you know, one day, Saul of Tarsus, she said, I was living with Saul of Tarsus, the next day with the Apostle Paul, to only be able to fulfill some of those shoes. But I came into this whole thing with just these, you know, these rose-colored glasses on, thinking that, wow, you know, God had brought me into this. He had changed my life. He had just transformed me. And everybody must be in this for the same reason. And then reality sets in. And I found out very quickly that many people were using the message of the gospel for their own good, for their own ambitions. In fact, many were using the gospel even for the place of controlling and it sometimes hurting other people. You know, look at what has happened, not to just pick on Catholicism, but look at what has happened in the Catholic Church. And I dare say that we would not want to, you know, Christianity would not want to point fingers at what has happened. And what's even more tragic is I've heard of Messianic Hebrew Roots congregations that the same things have been happening. That you take your place of authority, and then you use that authority to manipulate other people, to manipulate the weaker, a person uses that authority to manipulate small children, to get their own selfish interests and desires, not having a clue that one day they will stand before Messiah himself and give an account. And if you have done it unto the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. I think that the day of judgment is, there's no way to describe that day. I want to be able to stand before him on that day, knowing that I did not walk through life perfectly, but I walked through it with my whole heart. I heard someone say just a couple days ago, they don't want to live their whole life and be told in that last day, you did a pretty fair job at life. The words, well done, my good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy that is set before you. Those should be words that each of us should be living for. Is there anything else really that's worth living for than those words? I personally think not. But so what? All that matters is that in every way, whether honesty or in pretense, the Messiah is being proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. Shaul knew that even the enemies that were coming before him, even those that were seeking to undermine him, that was all being used. That was all being used for the furtherance of the gospel. Even our adversaries. Years ago, I had my pastor was on the board of a large ministry of that day. I won't tell which one it was, but this is one of those things of of someone using the gospel for selfish ambition, but yet in the other, on the other hand, the Father using it for His glory. This pastor told me that he literally was sitting in a board meeting of this ministry, and the person that was then in charge of the board said, "What we need is some persecution, because persecution brings in money." Yeah, it does. Persecution brings in money. Well, that was selfish interest. The truth is, the persecution also gets your message out. Sometimes the best press that you can get is bad press. Now, none of us want that, okay? I can go online and find things that have been written about me. I'm very blessed in that I have a football player with my same name, different spelling, but same name, a professional golfer, and of course, who was it that played in that movie years ago? I didn't watch the movie Michael Clayton. There's a lot, if you type in my name, there's a lot that comes up first, okay? So you have to dig a little bit. But the truth is, I've had some bad press through the years. Even that, the Father can use for His glory. So we go back to this verse again. "Yes, I will continue to rejoice, for I know that this will work out for my deliverance because of the prayers and support I get from the Spirit of Yeshua the Messiah." Again, it's going to work out. What you're going through today is the statement, "This too shall pass." Okay, whatever it is in life that you're going through, it did not come to stay. It came to pass. It's what you do with it when it's passing through that becomes your testimony. And your testimony is a reflection of the God that we serve. How is our testimony? It all accords, I can't believe I'm going through this, in John we didn't do this, but in Paul it's just kind of a conversational thing, so we can go through a number of verses at a time. "It all accords with my earnest expectations and hope that I will have nothing to be ashamed of, but rather now, as always, the Messiah will be honored by my body, whether it is alive or dead." That kind of takes us to another place here. That it's not just in the honoring, it's not just that our life honors Him, but our death. This was a remarkable thing has been through the years. How afraid most people are of death. Now, I'm not into, I just soon live a few more years. I really just soon live a lot of more years. I just soon live until the kingdom comes. That's fine with me. That's my prayer. My prayer is, may it come soon and in my day. May I see the kingdom come. That's just how I want to live. But I understand this, that so many people are afraid of death. Now, again, we should not be afraid of death. Now, how we go from here to there, that's the part that, we don't have control over that. We have no control of how we're going to, if we do not walk into the kingdom, we have no control of how we will transition. We will transition from this earthly body, this body of clay, this body of dirt, this earth suit, as one person says. We have no way of knowing or controlling how we are going to transition from here unto there. That is what that can be frightful. But in the end, to have a fear of death itself. This is going to sound a little judgmental. To have a fear of death itself is maybe one of the worst testimonies that we can have. I think we should, if the subject comes up with someone, the greatest testimony that we can have is I'm at peace with that moment. I may not want to, deal with how the transition's going to happen, but as far as the death itself, that transitional place, that moment that you move over to from transitional to there it is, that should be something that we're actually looking forward to. That's not morbid. It is not morbid for us to embrace joyfully that we will one day be in His presence, that we will one day be in the kingdom. That's not a morbid thought. For some people it is. For to me, life is Messiah and death is gain. Of course, that verse is one that I memorized in King James, and now I'm trying to figure out how to say, which one here. To live is Messiah. To die is gain. Can we truly say that everything about our lives is about Him? What is that? I mean, it's one of those that it's hard for me to portray into words. I got 2 minutes left. To live is Messiah, to die is gain. Okay, it's easier for us to kind of wrap our minds around the to die is gain because we're going to be standing before Him in the kingdom, all of those things. But this thing, for me to live is Messiah, that's so much more difficult to try to figure out how to put that into actual terms. And the reason is, I think, because it's going to look different in every person's life. To live is Messiah is not something that I can put a formula. I can't write a book or do a teaching and tell you exactly how that is going to be manifested in your life. It's something that each of us is going to have to figure out on our own. And that's maybe why many people never get there. Because they're not willing to put in the efforts. This life, walking out this life in Messiah, especially this life in Messiah that has this the Torah, it's not the easiest thing. It's the most worthwhile. Living your life for yourself, just going with your own whims and desires and interests and all of those things, that's easy. That's easy, but it's also worthless. This life that you and I have chosen to live is not the easy way. I can tell you, though, as far as how I look at it, it's the most worthwhile way that there is. There's nothing in life that's as worthwhile as living it for Him. Because you'll end up living it for others also. Gotta go. Shavua Tov. Have a blessed, prosperous week and year. Bezrat Hashem. God willing, see you again next week. And until then, as always, gotta get known for this one. But I want this to be my prayer for you. Whatever you're doing in life, whatever you're grabbing a hold of, be strong.